Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Gotta walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer practice, then there goes the extra time for a jog. That's okay. Maybe next week.
When everyone else relies on you, it's easy to put your needs last. Therapy is a dedicated time to focus on what you need to be happy, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. BetterHelp offers convenient online therapy on your schedule. It's the same professional service you'd get from an in-person therapist, but with the option to communicate when and how you want, by chat, phone, or video call. Go to their site and fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
So the transfer window closes, and what a mad one it's been. Easy to suggest it was the wildest we've ever seen. Grizzy back in red and white, Tammy off to Rome, and the world went mad when CR7 and Lukaku came home. Messi off to PSG in floods of tears in which you drown as Barcelona's finances, stressed for years, came crashing down. The Kane to City saga ended with Harry staying at the Spurs as Pep brought in Super Jack to ensure his City purrs the first 100 million British signing, pressure to deliver as Tommy Tactics boys in blue come raiding from the river. Arsenal spent the largest to overhaul their heart, but you might not have guessed it from their abhorrent start. Luke de Jong to Barca in the weirdest late mover, while PSG picked up talent like a mad free agent Hoover. And then Poch got his fullbacks that let his sides take flight. Hakimi and Nuno Mendes, the Paris future's bright. In France, there was an awakening, though, and Nice turned up to play. Debo, Cliver, Christophe Galtier's here to stay. Marseille back Sampaoli all the way into the hill. The maddest side in football fancy themselves a title till. Real pushed for Mbappe, but Nasser wasn't selling. If that'll cost them dear next year, time will be telling. But they picked up Camavinga, one for the future and one for now, while across the Clásico, things unraveled like a circus come to town. Will La Masia save Barcelona? No one yet can say, but we have hope that Koeman will trust the youth. Let Ricky and Gavi play. Atleti played it beautifully, giving Simeone what he craves, but underdogs no longer. How will they deal with being faves? Not the same for Inter, who lost their favourites' mantle, as last year's coach and squad, well, got dismantled. But replacing on a budget, they've replaced as best they could. And in Correa and Edin Dzeko, they've got goals to the good. Jose's Roma are charging, while Juventus started slow. But once Allegri gets them firing, we know they're good to go. In Germany, it was all changed. But in the manager's seats, the merry-go-round span on like musical chairs to the beats. Bayern picked up a coach, the skipper and a star from their nearest rivals last year. So they're against the bar. Leipzig and Dortmund hit back with good signings of their own. But you'd be a brave soul to bet against that title staying home. A few weeks in, a window done. It's time to look for sure at how we think it'll all play out. Now we know a little more. This is Ranks FC's 5x5, where we make our final calls on how these leagues will look when the final curtain falls. Engines ready, research done, lights out, and off we go. Sit back, get a drink, and settle in. We hope you enjoy the show. This is Ranks FC. My name is Jack Collins. I will be your host today. And joining me, as ever, is the Rank God, Mr. Sam Tai.
Woo! That was sensational. Absolutely sensational. You look out of breath.
I am out of breath, but we keep going. Thank you, my friend. And of course, our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones.
Hello, mate. How many times did you practice that before we recorded?
I will give you a flat naught.
Naught?
That was the first time I've ever read that poem out loud. So
wow, and it was actually one take for once. Well done.
You say that quite a lot now, which makes me feel like it's maybe not always, it's usually one take. Like, you know, you're often like, oh, for once it was actually one take. You said that on the last four poems. So I feel like
somewhere. Actually, no, though, because you still tend to redo them afterwards.
Yeah, you do. You scurry back off into your hole and redo like one line.
It's like how you stumbled over Roma just then. I bet you redo that.
No, I did have a think about it. It's marked. We'll see how we go.
Let's stop giving him a hard time. It was a wonderful poem. Beautiful wrap up of the summer. And
he's got a new football shirt on.
Always
got a new shirt.
Yeah, it's the Ajax. It's the Ajax red, white, and green. Hey, red, yellow, and green. It's a beauty.
Did it just arrive?
Absolute beauty. It arrived yesterday. I'm delighted by it. This is great news. Great news for everybody. So yeah. we're having a good time. Boys, this is the start of what we hope will become a ranks tradition, a ranks staple. It's called 5x5. And basically, now that we've had the transfer window shut, now that we've had a couple of games in the season, and we feel like we're a little bit more, I know, oh, fair with what's going on with all of these teams. It's hard. It's easy to make predictions. And we do a lot of, you know, preview shows where we look at the leagues and we try and do our best to see, you know, kind of on paper how things are going to play out. But until you really get into the kind of meat and bones of the season, it's very difficult to see exactly what's going on. So I think this is a nice time. International break. The windows are shut, as we say. All the squads are settled. We have a point now where we can look at this and try to really like hone in on what we think the predictions are going to be for the rest of this season. I think, importantly, what we're going to do is try and pick the top five teams in each of the top five leagues in Europe. Now, I know that currently, and I'm going to caveat this, that Portugal are above France in these leagues. But I do think that just for interest's sake at the moment, we're going to have to stick with France. We have plenty of love for the Primeira. And any of you who are patrons, our ultras, will know that we talk about the Primeira quite a lot on there because I, for one, I'm a huge fan of what's going on in Portugal. But I think for this episode, we're going to stick to France because it means, well, one, we can talk about Lionel Messi, but two, we can talk about, you know, the rest of these teams. Nice, Marseille had some wonderful windows that we're, you know, very excited about and looking forward to watching. So it gives us the opportunity to discuss those as well. But Sam, you were saying you think this is maybe the best and the only time you really can make predictions about these leagues.
I hope that everybody else follows suit here. And, you know, we set a staple here. We draw a line in the sand and we're able to say, look, this is the appropriate time to make predictions, because making predictions with like 3 weeks left in the transfer window is a silly thing to do, isn't it, really? It's a bit of a fool's errand. You never really know what's going to happen. And look, we've already talked about in previous episodes how we think the Premier League is going to play out, how we think the Serie A top four is going to play out. And then 3 weeks of transfers happen and you start to change your mind a little bit. So this is the perfect time for me, in my opinion, to lock this in. So this is good. And I'd encourage everybody that listens to send yours in too. So obviously have a listen to what we have to say, but our top five in each of the top five leagues, send them in to us on social, on DMs, whatever it is, on Twitter, share them. And obviously we can make it a bit of a competition. It can become a bit of a tradition, as you say.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that, I think it's probably just best to get into it, get stuck in. There's a lot of chat to be had here around each of these leagues. So let's get into it. And we'll start with the Premier League. And Sam, I'm going to ask you to give me your 5-1 to begin with, in the words of Jim Morrison of The Doors.
Okay. Obscure reference for the episode, tick. 5-1. Okay, so in number five, I'm going to put Tottenham. I think that in my preseason list, I think I had Leicester locked into this spot, but Spurs' good start to the season, the harmonious start that Nuno has managed to foster, and Harry Kane, right? I think we were under the impression 3 weeks ago that Harry Kane would probably end up at City. He didn't. He's ended up at Spurs, and so this is a bit of a game changer. So Spurs in at five, and then my top four remains what it was 3 weeks ago. Manchester United in four, Liverpool in three, Chelsea in two, and City at number one. I really struggled to split City and Chelsea, but I went for City top before, and I don't see a reason to change.
Okay, DJ, what have you got?
Oh, it's similar, obviously. Five is Tottenham, four is Liverpool, three is Man United, two is Man City, and the champions are Chelsea.
Interesting. I've gone similar to you at the top, but I'll start at five with West Ham. who I think have been excellent and I enjoy, and I'm going to continue enjoying watching. At four, I've got United. At three, I've got Liverpool. At two, I have City. And at one, I also have Chelsea, Dean. So I have switched those over. I think the addition of Romelu Lukaku, Sam, is what's flipped those for me. And I know we said we discuss it. And the fact that, you know, you said that you put City at the top and you haven't seen a reason to change. Romelu Lukaku is the reason I have changed that. I think that is the game-changing signing in that regard.
I think Lukaku would sign, but I made my initial
prediction. He had not. He might have been close, but he had not signed.
I think I knew it was happening, and I still didn't fancy it. I distinctly remember thinking that doesn't matter. City, because we compare them to City, who then didn't sign the number nine. But I'm a big believer in Ferran, and also just a big believer in the City machine, not necessarily needing a striker. So obviously, not saying Lukaku isn't an exceptional purchase for Chelsea. He is exceptional footballer. But I'll go for City. Also, it's nice to be different, you know? Nice to be different.
I appreciate it. I mean, Dean, I think maybe the one that you've gone different to both of us on here is that you've put United above Liverpool. Is this their recent signings doing the business here? Or is this what we were always felt?
It's logic. It's logic because the United were already better than Liverpool last season, and United have got stronger and Liverpool haven't. And they're going to lose Sadio Mane and Mo Salah for a month, potentially, of the season. Man United have just signed Cristiano Ronaldo, Jadon Sancho and Raphael Varane. And I feel like quite often you two, I don't say disrespect Man United, but you worry so much about defensive midfield that I think that it affects your overall picture of how good Man United can be in actually producing results. Now, I don't think they're going to be the best team to watch throughout the season. I think they'll produce some brilliant performances, but overall, there'll be games where they just churn it out. I guess like we saw against Wolves, like there'll be games like that that happen. But I think they'll get over the line now. And I think that Ronaldo factor is huge. I think that is the difference for them in terms of winning games that they weren't winning before. I'll be honest with you. I think the biggest change is that I expect United to win a trophy this season. I think that's where the biggest factor will come in with Ronaldo. But we'll talk about that another time. And yeah, I think United ahead of Liverpool for me, especially, as I say, because I know that Salah and Mane are going to be gone for a bit. And I don't see at the moment who's going to replace them.
Kaidi Gordon.
Reliably.
Harvey Elliott.
Reliably.
The kids.
Yeah, I've just got to give United the nod over him, to be honest.
No, I think it's a perfectly reasonable argument. I think it is fair. My caveat would be that I think the United were better than Liverpool last year, but that was Liverpool who were missing, you know, 3-4 key players at any given time. I think those players will return, and I think you've got to base it on the fact that you don't think they're going to go and have an injury crisis of the same magnitude as they had last season. That's my thinking in that regard.
I guess if it does, though, my worry is still there. Like, if it does happen again, they haven't brought in the depth that they needed to replace them. If it does happen again, I think any team would
collapse with the injury crisis that Liverpool had, because all their injuries came in the same position at centre back. There's not a team in this list that can withstand what Liverpool withstood. So you have to hope that none of them get it. Look, I am worried about United's midfield. I always am. We don't need to go over that old ground, but my worries are threefold, mate. And you know that too. I worry about right back, defensive midfielder, and the manager, who is so far off the level that the other three set in Pep and Tuchel and Klopp. He's so far off it that to me is the clear distinction between those sides.
I don't think there's going to be that much of a difference that it's going to cost United a place in the top three. But we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, we will see, Dino. All right, I'm into this.
All right, we're away. We're away. We've begun. I mean, I've stuck West Ham in there at five.
Oh yeah, I did. Like that.
Do you know why I didn't? It's like
they've got to play a European campaign.
No, it wasn't really that. It's more like there's so much on Mikel Antonio's shoulders here. It's like, what? Like, and he's now playing for pointless games for Jamaica in the middle of the season as well. Like, I respect his decision to play for them and try to get to World Cup, but it is not going to happen. Like, then they've just lost 3-0 to Panama. He's having a 10,000-mile round trip ahead of a weekend in which West Ham are looking to build momentum. And I have West Ham fans are like, oh, do you really have to be doing this? You could have had a nice little break building up to Southampton, and we could definitely have got 3 points. Actually, what I've heard a few people saying is what's also annoying is that Southgate never actually just gave Antonio a call up, because he would be in the England squad now. Probably would have started instead of Patrick Bamford, actually, in the last few days.
Yeah, no, it is a fair point. What I like, and my kind of guesswork caveat to that, is I obviously don't assume that any striker can play every single game in the whole season. It's a big long season, and there's lots of competitions here for West Ham, and they don't have that much depth up there. But I do like Jared Bowen as a nine. And I think he's the exact mold of player that will fit that Moyes system. And look, he's not as good as Mikel Antonio. Very few players are. So it's not, it's not saying he's going to slot in there and score the same amount of goals. But those off-the-shoulder runs, the ability to get in behind, the fact that he will look to basically play out the same system in a way that I think we've seen with West Ham, that it hasn't worked, them try and change it up. We saw Seb Allaire go in there and just didn't really ever click. We've seen lots of players come in this kind of number nine role and just not really work when Mikel Antonio is just so good at running that shoulder, running that channel, being able to hold up. I just think that Jared Bowen will be able to slot in there quite nicely this season. And I think that that's what he's going to be used primarily as, this kind of nine rotator. And that makes me excited. And I think that that is what's going to carry West Ham through this season for me. I think that is a really nice little pickup that we'll see much more of later on in the year.
Yeah.
Very good side, extremely talented in certain areas, but that depth just keeps them out of the conversation for me. I think Spurs are a much safer bet there for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, safe bets are really my go-to, as you'll see for the rest of this list, I'm sure, across the rest of these. And with that, shall we go to Spain? Sam, we'll just go start with you again.
All right. 5-1. Number five, I've gone for Real Sociedad.
Mm-hmm.
Who managed to keep Alexander Isak, and we've got another season of David Silva. Now, there's a little pack there, which I'm very excited to see how biased Jack has been when he picks his number five, but it's an interesting one. But I'd give Real Sociedad the edge there. I've gone for Barcelona in fourth. I'm very, very worried about the exit of Griezmann at the last, and obviously the entrance of Luke de Jong and where that leaves them cutting edge-wise. And I already had the massive concerns about the centre-backs. I've gone for Sevilla in third, Real Madrid in second, and Atletico Madrid to retain the title at number one.
Okie dokie. Dean, on to you.
Okay, so mine is in fifth, we've got Athletic Club.
Ooh.
Purely biased because they're New Balance. fourth.
This is worse than Jack.
In fourth, we've got Sevilla because they always finish fourth. Then we go on to Barcelona, who... they still got enough to finish in the top three. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt here. And Ansu Fati coming back, and that number 10 shirt, that could do a lot for them. So, yeah, still got faith in Barcelona getting top three. And then it's the Madrid shootout for top spot. And, yeah, the addition of Griezmann. They were already favourites, Atletico Madrid, to win the league this season. And now, as we said on Patreon the other day, there's no excuses. There's no excuses. And they should, to be honest, beat Real Madrid to this title.
Okay. That's a change for you. That's a big change because you'd gone Real earlier in this, which is a shift. I've gone Valencia at five because why not?
Because why not? Okay, vibes.
Just vibes. Sevilla at four, Barcelona at three, Real at two, and Atleti at one. That's a double drop from me for Barcelona, who I had as title winners. I literally had Barcelona as title winners the day before deadline day. And then suddenly they swapped Griezmann for Luke de Jong and they've dropped two places immediately in the table here for me. It's just, I was so excited. I was really, really excited about the kind of prospect of this Griezmann Depay pivot up top, just being able to dovetail off each other, being able to move with each other, allow Ansu Fati the time to recover properly before he got put back into the side, give that Braithwaite that kind of exceptionalism that he's allowed to do on that left and just be able to run the shoulder and do what he does best without having to worry too much. And then suddenly it's just all gone. And I am just so upset by basically everything that's happened at Barcelona in the last couple of days. And I've dropped them two places. But yeah, Valencia at five is the call. They've started really well. And they don't have European competition, which is where I think I have given them the edge on pretty much everybody else. I think Bordalas will make this side incredibly hard to beat. He will make them abrasive. He will make them difficult to play against. They signed Helder Costa on loan from Leeds, which I really like. I think it's a really good pickup. I think he'll have a really, really good season in La Liga. Him on one side, Gonzalo Guedes on the other, Maxi Gomez through the middle is I think a very, very good front three. And then Carlos Soler pulling the strings. Jose Gaya is still there. There's some, you know, it's a really smart kind of business going on. There's some odd things. Guillamon's basically playing as a defensive midfielder, which is very bored last, just playing a centre back at six and just letting him drop in pretty much all the time to make a back three. Omar Alderete joined, who I like. And then obviously there's the old guard in Diakabi and all the players around them. Daniel Vaz, good players, all of them. And I think Bordalás will make this Valencia side incredibly hard to beat. I think they'll just grind their way to fifth. So that's my logic there.
I hope it doesn't happen, purely because any Bordalás side I think is quite difficult to watch. And this must sort of kill you to a point here, like sort of pimping this up a little bit, because it's not, if they do this, it's not going to be fun. Like,
no, it's not.
It's not something to be tuning in for every week. Bordalás, who was the, you know, used to manage Getafe and managed to get Getafe punching well above their weight based on some pretty abrasive football, a lot of yellow cards, a lot of crunching tackles, but effective football nonetheless. You can't take that away from them. Give that to a Valencia squad that are clearly much more talented. And yeah, they started really well as well, haven't they? 7 points from nine. So it's once you said it, I thought, what the hell? But thinking about it a little bit more makes a bit more sense. But yeah,
I like what they've done in the market. And I think that Bordalás tends to have sides punching a wee bit above where they actually stand in the table. Mm. I think probably this Valencia squad is sixth or seventh. So to then go and look at it in that regard, I think they must, especially with the lack of European games, I think everyone else is going to be quite intrigued by. You know, I think everyone else is going to be quite honing in on. I know we spoke about Betis just at the start there, and I think that there will be a big push for Betis to try and do something in Europe this year as opposed to domestically. I think that's a feeling around it. It'd be a really interesting one to try and kind of throw all the kind of money in the bank at the European experiment, a little bit like Villarreal did last year, right? You know, at the end of the season they kind of just went, well, we could try and win this competition instead of like worrying about where we're going to finish in the league. And I have a funny feeling that something similar might happen with a couple of these sides who are in the Europa League / Europa Conference League, and that might tick along.
Well, Dean and I are falling on the two sides of the Basque divide for this one, for fifth.
Nice. Yeah, Dean, Athletic Club is a call.
As I said, there's not a lot of logic to it, really. It's just pure New Balance biased. And nobody's... you've both had a complete guess as who's coming fifth anyway, so have I.
Of course, yeah. That's the name of the game here. Real Sociedad is a bit of a guess.
I mean, I like Valencia's a better guess because they are already third in the league. So Jack's already got a decent position there. I mean, Athletic Club are ninth, so not terrible. They're unbeaten. They're a good team.
Dino, stop looking at the table. Stop Why? Looking at the table. Three games in, and La Liga's barely started yet.
I like your Real Sociedad shout, Sam. I like your Real Sociedad shout.
None of them are playing properly yet. None of them have even. No one's found their gears yet, except maybe Valencia.
Except Valencia, who have careered out of the blocks. Yeah. I was having a great time. But yeah, you're right. I mean, and Betis have really not hit any sort of stride yet. I think we're just seeing teams start to come together. But yeah, I think it's interesting. I like your Real Sociedad chat, Sam. I think that's probably a relatively safe bet. Just question is where they focus their energies, because obviously we've seen them win silverware last year. And now is it a question of trying to close that gap to Sevilla, or is it a question of trying to push on and challenge in more competitions, in more domestic trophies, in Europe, in all of those things? Is this where you go from it? And is that how you, I don't know, placate a fan base more than trying to push up the league? You know, what's the difference between sixth and fifth is not huge in terms of what it actually brings you in terms of European competition, but it would be huge if you went and won or got to the semi-finals even of a cup or of a European competition in that regard. That's a slightly different kind of way to look at it, I suppose.
Jack, did you have Barca in third?
I did have Barcelona in third.
And I was the only one that went down to four for them.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. Like, I know that we're all quite cold on Barcelona, but that seems like a big drop. Now, I know Sevilla weren't miles off last year and they have strengthened, but this is still a Barcelona side, much as I'm upset with them, that are very, very talented and still is the best midfield in the league.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, they weren't miles off last time around. Sevilla were still technically in a title hunt with four games to go. They managed to hang on in there, and they are one of those teams that does tend to grind out results in a really efficient manner. They are very physical when they have to be. They're very solid when they have to be. They're pretty reliable outfit, really. And they didn't really they didn't lose any players, did they? They ended up keeping Jules Koundé, who is one of the best centre-backs in La Liga. That's great for them. contrastingly, Barcelona lost Griezmann and Messi. And they also have, you know, some issues that are hanging over the club. They've hung Mariba out to dry over the course of the summer. Koeman's under pressure. There's not a lot of faith in him. I look at two very different scenarios here. And for me, it's kind of easy to pick the much more settled and glowing and rosy scenario in Sevilla here, who were not far off last season anyway, and just think, well, carry on going as you are. In fact, achieve the exact same as you did last season. And it's quite possible that you just finish above Barca anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the point I think I have with this is that I know we've just said that no one's really kicked into gear yet, but Sevilla have been incredibly unconvincing in the games I've watched. They've been relying on last-minute Eric Lamela goals, which is not something you can rely on for an entire season as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I suppose they have lost Luke de Jong, mate. That's who they've lost. So there's Barcelona weakening a rival.
Oh no, Sevilla's third choice striker's gone to Barca.
Yeah.
Oh no.
So there's that. I like what Sevilla have done in the market. It pains me to say it as usual, but obviously I think Rafa Mir is a really, really good pickup. I think that he's going to be an excellent rotator. I think they've got enough depth in the squad to fight on a couple of fronts. I genuinely, this is the reason I put Barcelona above them. I think Barcelona are going to get knocked out in the group stages of the Champions League. And therefore, I think we'll be able to focus their energies on La Liga and we'll probably just about have enough in the tank to get over the line in third. That's where I'm at on it.
Fair enough. I think whichever way it goes, these two teams will finish within 4 points of each other.
We'll just
see how the margins fall.
Okay. All right. And with that, we should move to Italy, I think. Sam, what you got for me?
Okay. Number five, Lazio. Number four, Milan. Dropping down from 2 to 3 from our preseason predictions is Atalanta. I've been politely reminded by someone that Atalanta are always finished third. That's their thing. So, well, yeah, why go against history? Dean picked Sevilla in fourth for the same reason. Sounds like good logic to me. Inter bumping up to second place. The big difference here, well, when we started talking about this, I initially had Inter in fourth, you know, 3 weeks ago. I was very worried. I was worried for a couple of reasons. I didn't see Dzeko as the absolute replacement for Lukaku. I thought it was a good pickup, but it doesn't quite get there. Well, Joaquin Correa and Dzeko is a damn good job of replacing him. And they lost no more players. And we weren't quite sure at that point how this was going to spiral, how many more would leave, where they would be left in the financial crisis. And actually, the bleeding stopped, didn't it, at the end? So I'm going to pop back into second. And I'm still going to back Juventus for the title, despite 1 point from their opening possible six. Still going for it. Allegri power, baby.
Fair enough. Dean?
Fifth, Roma. Fourth, AC Milan. Third, Lazio. Second, Inter Milan. First, Juventus.
You think Atalanta are not going to finish in the top five?
Yeah.
That's a big call.
Yeah, it's not really based on much. It's just a prediction after a couple of games.
But it's not as big as my calls. Fifth, Milan. Fourth, Atalanta. Third, Inter. Second, Juve. Top of the pile. Jose Mourinho's AS Roma.
Oh, my
here we
goodness.
Go.
What is
here we
wrong
go.
With
you? Here's the shout. Here's the big call.
You don't
I think Roma are winning the league.
That.
I think Roma are winning the league.
That,
I do believe that. I fully believe that Roma are winning the league.
Why?
I have decided that they are excellent and I think they're going to win the league.
We've allowed this to happen, Dean. This is our fault.
I had them fourth. I got excited and then I've watched them loads. I basically just really enjoyed them and I've decided they're winning the league. That's as far as it goes.
When he said fourth, we should have called an intervention.
Yeah.
And we've allowed this to spiral. I'm blaming us. I'm taking this on our own conscience. Roma winning the league.
Yeah.
Last game that you say what you've seen so far. Well, the last team they played against, I had never heard of. Salernitana. Tell me about
it. Yeah, I just signed Frank Ribery. How about that? Just signed Frank Ribery.
So they beat them 4-0. I'm sorry, but I'm not reading anything into that. And they beat Fiorentina and everyone got sent off in that game anyway, didn't they? Like from what I saw. So
yeah, I just think they're great. I'm just
no, don't get me wrong. Like I like watching them so far. And I
Tammy Abraham's going to score 25 plus and Roma are going to win the league.
Here's the thing. The reason I think Juve are going to... I wasn't going to have Juve down to win the league. I was going to say Inter managed to hold on. And then I remembered they signed Moise Keane.
Mm.
And I was like, that's actually... I haven't read a lot about this and people haven't seen a lot of talk about it, probably because I don't live in Italy. But that is a really, really good signing to replace Ronaldo. And you talk about homecomings and stuff, and this is probably as significant, really, as Lukaku going back to Chelsea. Like, it's different, obviously, but like, he didn't want to leave Juve first time around. It was purely a financial thing and a way for Juve to get some money in. It hasn't worked out very well for him, and I feel kind of sorry for him the way he's been used the last couple of years. And I feel that, like, all the reasons Lukaku has built up inside him to do well now going back to Chelsea, I kind of feel like in the last couple of years, King's probably got a similar thing to go up to Juve, and he's got all the traits to go and give them what they were missing. Like,
He was good for PSG last year. I think he went on loan there. He was impressive, and I think he will be good.
And he could be settled again. So, yeah, that gave me that. Just be like, actually, no, yeah, if he actually can produce some good form, then I think Juve do get the title back. But I think this is a really open league. I think that's probably the most exciting thing about it.
I'm really hot on Serie A, just in general. Like, it's been so much fun to watch straight, like, off the bat. Like, obviously, it's had the most goals, but, like, more than that, it's been incredibly entertaining matchups. And you spoke about Roma Fiorentina there as an opening kind of weekend game. It was absolutely chaotic from start to finish, and I love that. But I think there's going to be a lot of chaos. I just have a funny feeling. I have a funny feeling, and I believe in my own funny feelings because they always do me well. I'm really good at predictions, famously. I've gone for it. You know what? Sometimes you've got to take a risk. This is my risk.
This is the new balance thing with me saying Athletic Club are coming fifth. You've gone all out, back to Roma to win the league. It's all on kits.
You've done it on kits.
Sometimes you've got to back your source, right? Like, and this is me believing it. Look, if it was on kits, I think we'd also, Inter would be above Juve. So it's not just all on kits, but it might be. I mean, look, there's a couple of things. Okay, go on, Desam.
Yeah, back on the Juve thing. I mean, look, if Moise Kean can turn out and can prove himself finally and get that opportunity, great. But the loving for me and for is for Allegri. It's for Allegri sort of rekindling that magic inside Paolo Dybala. It's about this back line that's been there for centuries, but just last summer proved that it's still absolutely top tier. And Locatelli being added to that midfield. There's a lot of reasons for me to be very, very positive about Juventus. Allegri is one, but what he actually means for several players now stepping into a new season, players that massively underperformed last season, and that will just remind everyone just how good they are this time around. All right, hasn't started great, but take a little while to shake that rust off, I think. But yeah, big believer in Juve. And with Inter signing Correa, I felt like I had to put them top because Correa and Lautaro, keeping hold of him, with that midfield still intact, with Italy's best defence from last season still untouched, it's difficult to get away from that. And Simone Inzaghi is a very good manager. He's about as good as they could have possibly done post-Antonio Conte. So in terms of fighting fires, I have to applaud Inter. I think they've done a magnificent job of making something out of what could have been an absolute disaster.
Yeah, I mean, no, I agree. But I mean, you've got Juventus top. So
yeah, mate.
Here's, you know, you've just said I thought I had to put into top and then didn't. I mean, look, I'm just wary. Like, I know that I think Moise Kean is a wonderful player, and I know that Dybala will do more than he did last year. But they came second last year, and they've just lost 29 goals in the league in the shape of Cristiano Ronaldo. I'm not sure where they're coming back from. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I don't think that Moise Kean is going to score 29 goals in the league.
Chiesa.
I don't think Chiesa is going to step up. I think he will step up and be the guy for Juventus this time. I think he will be the important player, the guy.
He's the
Juventus
guy
this year. But with all that said, I don't know if that on its own is enough to turn the tide. And look, I think we're putting a lot of stock in Allegri, rightfully so, because he worked such wonders last time round. Yes, it wasn't pretty, but yes, he got the job done. And we've spoken to a lot of Juventus fans who were like, I wanted him gone because I was so bored. But now, obviously, I just want that winning mentality back. And I get it. But he's been out of the game for a little while. You know, things move on. Things change. I'm just intrigued to see if everything is quite as rosy as perhaps we thought it might be straight away.
And interesting that you level all of that at Allegri, and then you have sat there backing Jose Mourinho to win the league.
Yeah, loves Italy.
2015, Mourinho's last league title, so let's remember that.
It's all good. Look how much money United have spent since Mourinho left, and how many trophies have they won since Mourinho left. Nord, my man wins trophies.
But you go on there about Ronaldo and missing his goals, but then on the flip of that, hasn't everybody been criticising Juve and Ronaldo before he's left, saying that they've been catering for him and that it wasn't necessarily his number of goals that was so important. It was that he was upsetting the balance of the team and that the players around him who were supposed to be emerging weren't able to do that because he was there blocking that pathway. So now that he's gone, I'm thinking, well, people should now be more optimistic then about Juve. If he was part of this big problem, now he's gone, surely people should say, oh, okay, Juve will win the league now then, especially if they brought in a replacement striker.
I read a thing saying, talking about this yesterday, and it was a tweet from right back of the thing that's saying, there's a lot of people saying, oh, Ronaldo was finished after they lost to Porto in the Champions League. And it was one of the most nonsense statements I've ever heard. This man has scored goals wherever he's gone. And I do think there's legitimacy in the argument that other players don't play to their full potential when you have a star of that magnitude who demands a certain type of service in a way, right? That he didn't, you know, at Real Madrid, created his own chances a lot of the time. You know, he was a builder, he was a creator as well as a finisher. I think by the time we got to Juventus, we have to accept he's a different player to what he was at Real Madrid. It doesn't mean he's any worse. It just means he's a different player. And his goal-scoring ability is still absolutely unquestioned. I think there is a scope here for other players to emerge from that shadow when he's not there. But I also do think that kind of thing takes time. You don't just immediately be like, well, hey, I'm the best player in the world overnight. You know, those things take a while to kick in. And if they take a while to kick in while a lot of other teams are steaming through the league and Juventus are stuttering, then it's going to be a long season. And we saw PSG start badly last year, right? They never caught up. And I just worry that if it's going to take a little bit of time for Juventus to get to the place where they need to be, they just might not have the edge enough to top the league again. That's where I'm at.
I think that's completely fair. I don't think there is a team that you can pick here in Italy for number one that everyone could be like, yep. Like, we've already said, it's so open. And this is the reason why. You can make really good arguments for and against three or four teams to win this title.
Yeah. And none of us have Inter there who might just retain their title. We'll be like, we'll just be there like, yeah, that one, that was good. Before we move on, I just want to talk about Lazio quickly. You've got them in third, DJ. Sam, you have them in fifth. It's been a good start for Lazio as well. They've looked very pretty under Sarri.
They have, yeah. It's quite intoxicating, isn't it? At its best, Sarri ball. And I'm very invested in this one. I think Luis Alberto, Sergei Milinkovic-Savic, and a Felipe Anderson reclamation season is something that we can all get behind. And yeah, Sarri in Serie A with his style of play, it just works. We know that. And they've already started racking up these goals. It's quite special to watch in full flow. And Lazio are a very good side with a very good manager. So I put them in fifth. Again, it feels pretty tight up there, but definitely one to watch for the neutrals if you can catch hold of a couple of games here and there.
And Dean, you left Atalanta out of your five. That's a big call.
I'll just wind you two up, to be honest. it was like, do I put in Atalanta or Roma? And I thought, well, this will annoy him. And it did.
It didn't annoy me. You got Roma in there. Otherwise, I would have had them top and you two wouldn't have had them in your fives, which have been quite a statement move, I think.
Dean's probably just had a nice dinner with Andrea Agnelli and as a result has just left Atalanta out of his top
five.
Hates
Atalanta. Know? Look, it was nice that they finally signed Dane Koopmeiners because as far as I was concerned, they signed him in May. Yeah. So it was nice to see that one finally get over the line. And I told you so. I told you sign. I said that signing. Yeah. Basically, told you that signing was in the back, and therefore it was always going to get done, wasn't it? It was always going to get done. And with that, let's go to Germany, Sam, and you can start us off.
Okay, Germany in at number five. I'm going to take Wolfsburg. Mm-hmm. Definitely influenced by their perfect start, 9 points from nine. Definitely. Number four, I'm going to put Bayer Leverkusen. At three, I'm going to take RB Leipzig, who I think are edged to number two by Borussia Dortmund. We can get into that. Number one, look, I'm not the biggest believer in the strength at the top of German football this season. I really am not, but I still don't see anybody that can actually beat Bayern over the shape of 34 games. So I take Bayern at number one. How boring is that?
Very similar to my five. Dean, go on.
Well, it's the same as my five, so I don't even need to read mine out. Mine is exactly the same.
I've actually gone Frankfurt in five, which is the big change. Leverkusen in four, same as you two. But I've got Leipzig above Dortmund. I've got Leipzig in two, Dortmund in three, and Bayern winning the league. So I suppose there's little changes there, but not major ones. Frankfurt as ahead of Wolfsburg is a pretty safe gamble, I think, at this point. But I suppose the big big question here is Leipzig and Dortmund, right? I've gone the other way around to you two, but that's the you've gone for a change from last season's scenery.
Yeah, I certainly have. I mean, look, I think Leipzig have had a good window, if you're playing Football Manager, and there is an element of squad building that requires, you need to take a look at that age profile of a squad, and you need to make sure that you have enough kind of veterans and experience in it. I know it's cliched to hell, and I know it's boring to listen to, and you don't want to hear it, but this is an incredibly young Leipzig squad now. And what we've seen happen over the summer is Marcel Sabitzer, who is one of their elder statesmen, their veterans, has gone to Bayern, which doesn't help at all. And their two best centre-backs have left. Now, the work they've done in the market to replenish this young talent, you know, looking at like Vardial and Simakan and, you know, picking up players like Mariba, like, I'm all for it. And it's great. It's brilliant work. It's brilliant work. But this squad is incredibly young now. It really is. And they've lost their manager too. So they're changing things. They're changing the way they play. They're changing formation. They're changing systems to an extent. I know it's still a Red Bull coach, but everyone has their intricacies and nuances. I just think that this is a team that will probably draw or lose a couple more games than you think they will. Or they'll draw a couple or lose a games that you're like, how did they not win that one? And it will basically come down to inconsistencies, which are rooted in youth. So that's where I've gone. I've ended up with them in third, which is still third. But that's why I've decided to give Dortmund the edge.
Okay. Yeah, I think it makes sense. I just think that, especially with some of these players here coming through and Jesse Marsch getting hold of some of his old guns from Salzburg again, and I have plenty of faith in Jesse as a coach. It is basically where I'm at here. Like, I think Marco Rosa is a good manager. In fact, I think he's a very, very good manager. That's doing him a serious disservice. I think he's a very, very good manager. But I like what Jesse's doing. I think that this Leipzig side are going to go back to being a little bit more Rangnick-esque. I think that we're going to see a higher press. I think we're going to see more energy. I think it's going to be a little bit less ball-focused than perhaps it was under Nagelsmann, who I think tried to shift the intricacies of the Red Bull model a little bit towards more possession-heavy stuff. I think we won't see that with Jesse. I think we're going to see a return to that hard-running, counter-attacking, very, very kind of quick transitional football. And that's what I'm excited about. I think this young team, I agree with you, and I completely share your concerns that there's not that much experience kicking around here, apart from old Willy Orban, just anchoring the side. Gulashi and Orban anchoring the side, the Hungarian boys. I'm excited about Szoboszlai being given the opportunity to replace Sabitzer in the middle there. I think this is his moment to stand up and shine. We've talked about him so much on this podcast, but I think he has the potential to be right at the top of this game. One of the really elite tier midfielders that we see over the next 10 years. And I think this is the start of that for him. And just some of these players that are coming through that I'm just excited about seeing. And I reckon that this Leipzig side just about will have the kind of dynamic edge on a Dortmund side who I think might struggle when they're faced with, difficult. Well, like we say, if Haaland doesn't score, Dortmund don't win. And there are going to be games, not many, trust me, not many. But there are going to be the occasional game where Erling Haaland doesn't score. And that is going to, I think, just be the difference between a side that is a little bit more, well, spread out in how they create goals to one that relies so heavily on a player, even a player of that quality, but a single player.
Yeah. I mean, look, we've already seen it this season. He didn't score against Bayern in the Super Cup and they lost 3-1. And he didn't score against Freiburg and they lost 2-1. And then in the last time out, Dortmund beat Hoffenheim 3-2. But that's because Haaland scored a last-minute winner. So it literally is like their season is hinging on this guy. And last season, we spent the entire season talking about how flaky they were and how you just could never rely on them to put together a run of form and back them to do well. And, over five games already this season, you've seen that. To be honest, like, we're making these predictions right now. It'd been a lot easier if we were doing it next week, to be honest, because when you look at the fixtures for Bundesliga for this weekend, like, we're going to get a much better idea on Saturday how things are going to fare and how these teams are matched, because it's Bayer Leverkusen against Borussia Dortmund on Saturday afternoon, and then later on, like early evening in Europe, it's Leipzig against Bayern Munich. So we're going to get a much clearer vision, I guess, of like how these teams match up. If Bayern go and beat Leipzig in that game, then you're kind of like, convincingly particularly, then you're like, okay, well, we're not going to get much of a battle at the top here. And then similarly, like Dortmund and Leverkusen, like, Leverkusen could definitely have the potential to like upset the
established order.
Yeah, basically. And I think that that's what they'll see that as an opportunity to do. I guess, look, I've just seen that that clip that's going on social media of Haaland's volley during the international break where he hits a ball harder than any man has ever managed before. So if he's going to be hitting them like that, they've got absolutely no chance. As you say, it's Haaland or nothing. And it's ridiculous because
the amount of talent around this, yeah.
Yeah, the talent around him is obviously like deserves more respect than that. And they have got a very, very strong team, but they don't often live up to it. And obviously they've got a new coach who's still trying to figure things out.
Yeah, they're trying to adapt, aren't they, into this Marco Rosa kind of...
To be fair, everybody has a new coach. Literally everyone has a new coach. So it's kind of just like you have to accept it, I think, is one of those ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Dortmund, they're trying to take to this new shape, and how long it takes or how long Marco Rosa's willing to give it, I think obviously will determine a lot for their season. But the good news for them, as we've said, is while they're trying to adapt to that, they do have this guy up front who can just go bang, bang and just win you a game, even if it's not quite perfect all the way back. So yeah, we'll see. But I have a lot of faith in Rosa to get it right as well. So him plus Haaland contrasting against that Leipzig, that the youth of that Leipzig squad. Although I must give a quick shout out to the fact that they signed Andre Silva, which is a magnificent signing. Absolutely magnificent. I think that's where I've got the edge.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, the other toss-up is Wolfsburg versus Frankfurt in fifth, but I think this is a case of Wolfsburg have had the better start, and I completely appreciate that you've gone there. I don't trust Van Bommel at an absolute jot.
They got rid of Josip Brekalo.
Yeah.
That should be a fireable offence.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Frankfurt sent him to Torino on loan. What are you doing?
Mm. Frankfurt started awfully, but yeah. I'm still sticking him in here because I just have a fair bit of faith that Oliver Glasner is going to sort this out. Mm. Again, not the nicest coach in the world by all accounts, a particularly abrasive man, but he does get results. And I think he will get results with this Frankfurt team once he gets them playing the way he wants to. And he's got Jens-Petter Horger. So, you know, the truth is going to shine. The truth will out. As they say, truth will out. And I believe that will take Frankfurt to fifth, which takes us to our final league, which is France. And I hand it to you, Sam.
Okay, number five, I am going to take Lyon.
Hmm.
Number four, I'm going to take the explosive Marseille. Well, to be fair, they could finish anywhere between second and 18th, and you wouldn't be surprised. Number three, I'm going to take Nice. Number two is Monaco. And number one, can you believe it, is PSG.
Yes, very reasonable. Dean?
Fifth, Nice. Fourth, Marseille. Third, Monaco. Second, Lyon.
Whoa.
And top, PSG.
That's a big shout, getting Lyon in at two.
I'll explain my reasoning in a minute.
Yeah, I'm going to go for another rogue one in at five, just because why not? I'm putting Angers in there, the most fun side to watch in the entirety of world football right now. I don't care what you say. This front three of Cho, Fulghini and Bouffal is genuinely like the best thing in the entire world. They are so much fun. And watching them tear Lyon a new one the other week in complete control. I've just a little bit of faith that this is maybe more than a flash in the pan. They've got the old Lyon assistant manager as head coach. They have a very settled side here, and Fulghini stayed basically when everyone expected him to go. And I think this Angers side are going to cause quite a few flashes in the pan this year in terms of shock results. I fancy them to squeeze in and get fifth. At four, I have Marseille. Three, I have Monaco. Two, I have Nice. And one, I have Paris Saint-Germain. So, Dean, we'll start with you. Lyon at two, I think, is probably the second biggest shout between behind putting Angers in here.
But yeah, well, full disclosure here. I don't watch a lot of French football. I only watch PSG on a weekly basis. So what I did is I turned to what the bookies think. And this is the exact order in which they predict the league will finish. That's it.
I do worry about you sometimes. I really do.
Why? That is that if you haven't got any actual reasoning, and I don't want to do our listeners in the injustice of me sitting here making up reasons why I think they're going to finish second, when the actual truth is this is what the bookies expect. So that's good enough for me. This is my prediction for the season.
I'll tell you why the bookies have them in second. It's because of the squad. You actually take a look through this squad and just take yourself away from the fact that they've been a bit up and down recently. They've got Houssam Aouar, they've got Bruno Guimaraes, they've got Lucas Paqueta, and Moussa Dembélé is back, and he's on the goal trail already this season. Then you've got Anthony Lopes in goal. Dubois right back, you've got Kakare midfield. The more you go down the squad, the more you pick out the names, you're like, there's
it's
a
ludicrous
lot of,
to this
there
side.
Is a lot of talent here. There is more talent in this team individually on paper than there is in probably any of these sides other than PSG, in my opinion. Now, it doesn't always go like that. Obviously, I've got them in fifth and that speaks to that. That's not how football works. But I'm not necessarily surprised that that's where the bookies have got Lyon, because look at those names. They are very, very good players.
I don't even have Lyon in my five. I think Petr Bosz is going to be sacked before Christmas.
And then someone comes in and leads them to second.
Well, who? Like that's my question.
It's not
question.
For me to answer, mate. It's not for me to answer.
I don't know. I think Lyon have sold themselves a wee bit short here. And I just think that having watched them in the first couple of games, they are disjointed. Now, I know we've said this about various teams, about various leagues, that you can't really look at it, but I am worried about Lyon. They are not playing well. They don't look anywhere near sharp enough. They don't look anywhere like they have a kind of clue on how they want the manager to have them playing. Yes, there's a lot of star names in here. I don't know if Aouar's going to play. Because,
why wouldn't he play?
Well, we haven't seen much of him and he basically demanded to leave.
But the transfer window's finished and he didn't leave.
Well, the Turkish window's still open.
For 3 months?
Maybe he's just going to go to Turkey. That's all we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, it doesn't feel like anywhere near a United squad, and that worries me. I think there's problems with this Lyon side, and I think they're going to struggle. I suppose the next one, Sam, is that you and I have Nice and Monaco in reverse order, which is probably relatively. This is relatively close, I think, how it pans out. But you have Monaco in second.
Yeah, it's difficult to split, isn't it? A lot of appreciation for Gaultier and what he's able to do. Obviously, he won the league last season with Lille, so they were absolutely guaranteed a top three spot for me. He's taken over a really interesting project with Nice. There's a lot of young players in there again. I think the actual overall quality of Monaco's squad is better, and they haven't started particularly well this season either, although they've been clearly prioritising the Champions League, which they actually failed to get into anyway. But as soon as they basically started playing their first team in Ligue 1, they won. And I reckon that's going to be a relatively regular feature. They've got some amazing players. They've got Ben Yedder and Volland up front dovetailing. Gelson Martins on the right is amazing. Tchouameni is well worth your attention as potentially one of the rising sort of star number sixes in the game. Yeah, there's a lot to like in Monaco. A lot to like indeed. And they are also a young team. So I did find this genuinely a little bit difficult to judge. I just went for Monaco. I guess not quite flip of the coin, but I think I like their players a bit more. I think that's probably the key denominator. I do strongly believe these will be two or three either way.
Yeah, no, I agree. I got to where Nice were, and in the two games where they absolutely hammered Lille in the Galtier derby, and then they played Bordeaux and won very comfortably. Obviously, sandwiched between them is that bizarre game against Marseille where the crowd invaded the pitch and it all went a bit Pete Tong. But like, you know, on the whole, this midfield duo of Rosario and Lamina, I love. The fact that Kluivert's there, I'm hugely onto. Dante and Todibo in terms of a young defender and someone with experience to guide him through. It's a partnership I really, really like. Melvin Bard's obviously come in now finally and is starting on that left side. Walter Benitez in goal, the Argentine. I basically just like the balance of this side as a whole. And I think that with Gaultier in charge, who's obviously got so much, backstory for bringing through youngsters. He's got obviously the title in the bag from last year. I just see them pipping Monaco. So that's where I'm at on Nice.
I'd back Gaultier over Kovacs every day of the week. That's not in question. So yeah, not a nice tight one there. But Marseille I found very difficult because when they're good, oh my goodness me, they are wonderful. And you need to be able to try and separate amazing to watch from will do very well in the table, right? Because they obviously they're not always compatible. With Marseille, that's like, Sampaoli's Marseille is like the ultimate litmus test of that. The first 3 weeks have been utter carnage. So I just couldn't back them to be in here above Monaco and Nice, but I really felt they needed to be in the top four because when they're good, oh, they're good.
Oh, they're very good. They're very enjoyable on the whole, aren't they? Very, very enjoyable. Right. That means that we have covered the top five in each of Europe's top five leagues. That is your 5x5 complete. We'd love to see yours. So if you do fancy, send them in to us at Rank Squad on Twitter, at rank.squad on Instagram, or use the hashtag RanksFC, and we will take a look at them and share some of the best ones. We'll be sharing our ones on social as well over the course of it. And we'll come back to them, see if anyone nails it, if anyone nails it correctly.
Is there a prize? Maybe like if we could say that if you get all of them correct, Dean Jones will give you a nice smile.
I will do more than that. I will send you my only Ranks FC shirt. I've only got one, so you can have that. If you get all of these, if you get all of your predictions right, I will send you my Rank Squad shirt.
It seems like a reasonable bet from where I'm sitting at. Yeah. We'll sort a prize. If you nail a league, if you nail any league, you get all five in the right order, we'll sort out a prize. If you nail all five leagues, you can basically...
You can come on the show and host it for a season.
You can take my spot on the podcast. So consider where we're at. Right after the break, we're going to be in Melon of the Week and the Gibberish Rankings. Don't go anywhere.
Walk the dogs, school drop-off, meetings from 10 to 3, take kids to soccer, then... No time left for a jog.
When everyone else is relying on you, it's easy to put your needs last. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist online, so you can show up for yourself the way you do for others. Find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com.
Welcome back to Ranks FC, where it is time for my favourite part of the week. And Dean Jones, the floor is yours.
It's time for Melon of the Week. This week's Melon of the Week is FIFA's Chief of Global Football Development, Arsene Wenger. Arsene Wenger. Right, let's have a word with you, mate. This annoys me. So is part of his new job, he's now leading a consultation among figures in football about holding the World Cup every 2 years. No, we don't want this. Like, this was proposed by the Saudi Arabian Football Federation a few months back, and we don't want it. We don't want it, mate. And you wouldn't have wanted it either. If you were still manager of Arsenal, do you think you'd have wanted a World Cup every 2 years? No, you wouldn't. I know as part of this, like, they're talking about this idea of having two windows within a season where that's when your international blocks are and like you play more games than that. That's fine. I understand the reasoning behind that, so the seasons aren't as broken up and things like that. But I don't want a World Cup every 2 years. Like, the beauty of having it every 4 years is that when you get a game like, I don't know, England v Argentina, it's happening, I don't know, not even every 4 years, because you don't play them. So like, you might wait 8 years till the next time you play like a rival like Argentina, and then that occasion means so much more. And you don't want to be playing teams like that. Like how we've just talked about the other day.
It's a Super
England
League thing, isn't it?
As what?
It's a Super League thing. These games lose their value if you get them twice
exactly
a year
that.
In the same stadiums.
Exactly that. People say that they're sick of seeing England play against Andorra. Well, you'll become equally as sick of seeing England play the best nations if you're playing against them all the time. And Jackie also wants to scrap the Nations League, it sounds like to me.
Yeah,
so
that's the big problem. That's the big problem for me. I just think, look, the whole point of a World Cup is it's a festival of football, right? It's about, you know, that love. And I appreciate the fact that there's kind of trying to bring it to more people and trying to open it up so that more teams qualify, et cetera, et cetera. And look, I know there's a lot of people who are really, really against a 48-team World Cup. I can understand that. I'm not completely and utterly in one camp over that. I think that more teams getting to go to the World Cup and experience what it's about and sharing that feast of football is maybe a good thing. I don't like the setup with the way that there are three teams in a group and two of them qualify. I think that's a bit ridiculous. But on the whole, you know, I think that there is something to be said for the fact that the more teams getting to be part of a World Cup, and maybe a 64-team World Cup where it goes back to four groups of four, and there's just more of them, is the answer to that problem. But, and again, that's a story for another day. I just think that the kind of rarity of these moments, and it's exactly with what it was with the Super League, like the fact that you get these notes on a Champions League night and they're special and they don't happen that often, and they only come round every so often, especially if you're not a team that qualifies all the time, is what gives them their value and what gives them those memories. And you know, I harken back to Fulham qualifying for the Europa League and talking about that and those memories that we made traveling around Europe, you know, the one time that in my lifetime, really, that Fulham have been able to do that. That's what made that so special and so incredible for us. And I think just making things more, or just continuing to make things more regular, doesn't always mean that they're worth more. I appreciate that there are arguments for making sure that more people can do more things regularly. But I mean, where does it leave the Euros? Where does it leave the African Cup of Nations? Where does it leave the Gold Cup? These are all tournaments that I love. Where does it leave the Copa America? You know, these are tournaments that I love and love watching. And
they say it will raise the standard of the game. And I'm like,
I don't know if it will.
How much higher can we get from where we are right now in terms of the standard of the game? Like, it's fine. Like, we're all perfectly happy with this brilliant football that we're seeing already.
Yeah. Also, how does it raise the standard of the game? Like, I don't get that either.
Because less ensuring that
the lesser nations can't improve
than
the other ones can, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if this were to happen, you'd have a Euros, then a World Cup.
Every year there'll be a competition.
So you'd Alexis Sanchez the hell out of every player. He'd have to play, every player would have to play a continental competition, intercontinental competition every summer for 8 years in a row. Their careers
would have hated it as a manager, wouldn't he?
Players' careers will last much shorter if this happens. They can't do this.
Yeah, hopefully it falls on deaf ears. I think Michael Owen and John Terry are two of the people that he's got to speak to. So hopefully those two...
Owen won't like this. Out. He doesn't want to watch any more TV than he has to.
Owen hates watching football. This is part of his... It's kind of part of his shtick, isn't it? Like, he doesn't actually like watching football.
Are you winding me up, mate? Every 2 years. Why don't we do it every 10?
Yeah, exactly. What about, every eight? Every eight. let's get it on the flip.
Just put my goal against Argentina on a few times.
Exactly. That's the gibberish alarm, which means that it's time for you to take over the mantle again, DJ.
Yep, Sam hasn't done his gibberish ranking again.
It's becoming a little bit constant, this.
I've done a couple of weeks in a row.
A couple being the operative word.
Couple is two.
I've come up with a late ranking, and I thought, what's going on in my life? Well, I'm going back to America soon, aren't I, lads? So I haven't been to America at all for... almost 2 years now, and in a couple of weeks, I'm off to Southern California. So I thought, I'm just going to rank the three things I've missed most about Southern California. What have I missed the most? Number three, I've missed watching the local news. The local news in LA is different class, absolutely different class, because... here, the news is so boring in England. Like, you get no actual, like, insight, no good footage of, like, they'll tell you there's been a crash or there's been an incident. You don't actually see any of it. Well, in America, you see the whole lot. I remember, like, when we took Dylan for the first time, he, like, woke up at about 2 a.m. on our first night and had jet lag. He was awake for about 2 hours. So we stuck the TV on in the hotel room, watched a live car chase through the streets of LA for 2 hours until he was caught. Like, it was amazing. And then you're getting in, I don't know if you've seen the documentary on Netflix, Shot in the Dark. I think I've talked about it before, but there's like a whole living freelance photographers and stringers and cameramen make of just chasing crime scenes around LA at night. And they'll turn up at like fires or like major accidents, and you'll get them like getting in there. Sometimes they're on the scene before the police or the ambulances because they're tuned in to their radio services, and they're like there on the scene with a camera, like filming a murder or like filming somebody that's like, I don't know, been hit by a truck or like been a major car wreck. And in the news, they'll show it all. They'll show you someone being pulled out the wreckage. Absolutely different class it is. And I'm really looking forward to just spending a couple of weeks watching the local news.
You're twisted.
That's quite morbid, Dino. That is quite macabre.
Well, it's just, mate, I need some excitement in life. How long we've been locked down and I've been had these two kids to entertain.
Yeah, very true.
All I've been doing is watching Peppa Pig, mate.
Yeah,
Peppa Pig for 2 years is a lot.
All we get on the news is PowerPoint presentations from our health minister about COVID numbers.
Yeah, mate, I'm going to record some of the stuff on my phone and send it to you too. You'll see what I mean.
Excellent. Yeah. Right, what's in it too?
Sunshine.
It's so hot, Dean. It's so hot today.
Today is a really nice day. June, July, and August was rubbish in England. Yeah. Like, yeah. Absolutely. It started off quite bright in like April. It was like, oh, this could be quite a nice like summer. Could have a 6 month stretch here. No, it ended before it had even begun officially. So where else to go for sunshine and beaches than Southern California? And like, yeah, I'm just excited. I mean, I say this, it's probably going to rain for 2 weeks and it never does. But if ever you're looking for some reliable sun, then I'm heading to the right place. So I'm excited to just know that all I need is shorts and t-shirts. So that's happy days.
That would be nice.
That is nice. If you like the sun, I actually don't like the sun. So the newspaper or the big orb in the sun in the sky. I basically I just don't deal very well with the heat. I'm not particularly.
Well, this is the other thing though, because like in this part, like say where I'm going in Newport, like it doesn't get that hot either. Like it'll be like in American terms, like mid 70s, like. In Fahrenheit, like that's the kind of temperature you're getting. That's fine. It's really like 90. So
I'm gonna need that in Celsius, or I have no idea what you're talking about.
I don't know, it's like 19 or 20 or something like that.
Okay, yeah, that is all right. It is right. In mid 20s is too hot, but yeah, early 20s. Okay, I can live with that. All right, cool.
Exactly.
Fair enough. You sold me. What's in at number one?
California Pizza Kitchen. Oh my god, I've missed that place. People who live there don't even really like it. I think they look down on it like it's Pizza Express or something like that. And it probably is to them.
Pizza Express is class.
I love Pizza Express, yeah. Don't need to win me over on that one. But CPK, yeah, I've missed this. I was thinking like, what have I missed most? Have I missed Taylor's family, our friends? No. The thing I've missed most about America is California Pizza Kitchen and getting that pizza, dipping it in the ranch, having a nice beer with it. Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to most, lads.
Was going to ask if you were going to talk about ranch sauce here, but you've already gone for it open doors. I didn't even need to ask.
I'll tell you what. I'm not sure.
Can you bring a bottle back for us?
Yeah, I will. Yeah,
we did try it. Remember?
We did try it. It was nice.
There is a ranch you can get in the UK now, which actually is pretty good. But I'll bring you back a legit one.
A legit, I want a legit American bottle, so I can give it.
I'll get our friends to tell me which the best one is to buy, and I'll bring that back for you. And we'll go out for a pizza one day after a shift, and
we'll take our own sauce. Yeah, one year anniversary. What did you do? We took our own sauce to a pizza shop.
Oh my god, we actually can do it for our 1 year anniversary of Ranks FC. Let's do that.
That's exactly what we'll do.
In 2 weeks in America, how many times do you think you're going to visit CPK?
Not as many as I'd like. I reckon I'll get there 3 times.
That's a good bar.
That's not bad. I'll aim for 4, but if I hit 3, I'll be happy.
You'll be happy enough. Happy enough. Right. Well, thank you very much, Dean. I'm looking forward to seeing how these things pan out. Looking forward to seeing the shots of the news channels.
I was going to say LAFC as well, by the way, but then I decided to keep it unfootball related. But yeah, I am excited to go back to Banc of California Stadium and see LAFC, even though they're not actually very good anymore. Still be buzzing to be back there.
Anyone who's in the LA area and wants to see Dean at an LAFC game, hit him up on Twitter or Instagram and you'll be able to go and join him. Rank squad. He'd love to see the rank squad. You make him a sign and he can take a picture with it. It'd be great. This is what Dean loves more than anything else. So that's going to be exciting. Right. And on that bombshell, I think we're going to call this a day, boys. All that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to Sam Tsai.
Cheers, buddy.
Thank you very much, Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening. Do send in your 5x5s and we'll have a look at them. There is going to be prizes. We will set up some competitions and we will actually make some decent prizes. So that's exciting. And we will see you all next week. Thank you for listening. Take it easy. Peace.